This is a Power 98.7 podcast. Now we're talking. Subscribe to Power 98.7 podcasts in iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. There's more on power987.co.za.
26 minutes to the top of the hour. You tuned into Power Lunch with me, Ntokozo Mazibuko. You tuned into Power 98.7. Now we're talking. Remember, the number to dial is 0861-987-000. You can also tweet us your thoughts and opinions. They are welcome here on at Power FM 987. Just remember to use the hashtag Power Lunch. Jimmy has tweeted here. Jimmy Ramokhopa says, the point is that calling people land thieves is not going to help the economy. Using land policy to benefit the poor will. Anger is not an economic strategy. We need an economy that actually works, whatever that strategy is. All right, and I think he's just tweeting that in response to the conversation we were having as a precursor to the conversation that we're currently going to be having with my esteemed guests who are going to be joining me over the line very shortly. We're going to be joined by South African writer and political commentator Malaika Wa-Azania, as well as a political analyst and transformation expert Asanda Washing. They're both going to be joining me on the line very shortly. But I just want to make sure that we understand the kind of conversation that I'm hoping to have here. And our caller Koketsu actually touched on it. I mean, she was expressing why we have such difficulty as South Africans to talk through contentious issues. We kind of talk at each other and not, you know, we don't properly engage the issue. A lot of the time, we would much rather prefer to just shut down the other side and not actually engage with the content of what they're bringing to the fore, which is sad because it means that many of our discussions, many of the healing that I think still needs to happen in this country is still a long, long way from happening because we're not ready to engage on those raw and sometimes even painful parts of our history and even our present life as South Africans. So we know that the tweets from Mzinzi Mandela brought into sharp focus our debate on land. But I think the conversation that we're trying to have now with our guests is how best we address and discuss the issue of land in a way that doesn't police people's views, in a way that doesn't make people feel as though they can't be honest with their neighbor and say, yes, I want the land back. And these are my views. And have another person say, I don't think it's right that you can take the land away in that manner and be able to express their views. So let's quickly go to Malaika Wa-Azania. Hi, Malaika. Welcome to Power Lunch.
Thank you very much, Ntokozo and Asanda and the rest of the listeners.
So I just want to talk to, you know, why we specifically asked you to actually join us on the show and to talk to us about this issue. It's because I'm particularly drawn by the fact that you are young. So you are a part of, you know, this country's youth, but also part of the greater conversations, political conversations that we've been having in the last, I would say, perhaps, you know, five to 10 years or so. And, you know, the land issue is one that I think the youth of this country have certainly taken on, wouldn't you say? Some would even argue that, you know, of the issues that we've inherited from our parents, you know, we took on the education struggle very strongly and very keenly, as has been seen over the last couple of years. But we've also taken on the issue of land. And I'm curious, why is that? Why are we so drawn to this issue? Is it because perhaps, as Jimmy alluded to in his call, that we do often see it as the key to, I think, unlocking economic emancipation in this country?
Thank you very much, Ntokozo. So I think you are absolutely correct with the argument that, you know, the youth of today, we have taken on the issue of land very seriously, of course, along with issues around the economy, issues around education and so on. And I think that at the heart of the reason why the land issue is so particularly fundamental is because we've always understood it to be an expression of many other struggles that we have, right? And for a colonized people anywhere in the world, the issue of land is absolutely very fundamental. And I want to give you an example, right, to show you just how deeply embedded the land question is in every other struggle that you're talking about, education, economy, and so on. So I was part, obviously, of the fees must fall and the roads must fall generation, because I mean, I was a student at the time, as I am still now, and so on. And I've always argued that, you know, one of the things that people do not seem to understand, and it's not me alone, you know, Zethu Mtabeni at UCT was a lecturer at the time, made the same argument, and many others have made the argument, that the roads must fall movement of 2005 was not simply a movement about, you know, the monuments of colonialism as we see them expressed in statues and so on, right? But that it was fundamentally a question of spatial justice, right? A question of Black students and belonging, a question of Black students and citizenship, and the feeling that they are being treated like pariahs in their own country, the feeling of being excluded, not simply from, you know, the institution of education that is UCT or any other institution, but from the very makeup and the nature of the South African society, right? And so you see there that even with Roads Must Fall, the issues were about exclusion, the issues were about monuments of colonialism, but the issues were also about land, about Black people saying, but there is a spatial injustice that is taking place in this country, where Black people are held at the margins of existence, do not have access and space to enjoy this, you know, the land and so on. And you see that. So, and I'll give you another example, right? I'm a geographer by profession, and I'm very deeply invested in rural and urban land struggle.
Yeah.
In Kolobeni right now, there is a mining struggle, or an anti-mining struggle that is going on with the government, you know, wanting to impose mining lies, you know, mining in Kolobeni and, you know, parts of the Wild Coast. And you've got the community there, you know, led by the Amatiba Crisis Committee, fighting very hard and saying, you know, we don't want any private investment into our land, we don't want any land development or any mining to take place here, because for us the land is not simply a thing from which we must draw our life, you know, the economy and so on, but it is our very livelihood, it is our culture, it is our heritage, it is much bigger than that. And so you begin to see that land for colonized people, land for Black people in South Africa, is not just about the economy, it's not just about you know, what can we get out of it that is a commodity. It is fundamentally an expression of our heritage and our culture, and that is why it matters so much.
Having so beautifully just explained for us there how deep the connection is, you know, for a colonized people, and how, you know, land disposition and obviously land restoration in this particular instance, land expropriation without compensation, how symbolic it is, as you mentioned, as a form of expression of gaining the freedom that was once taken away. What do you say to people who want to police how people can talk about the land issue? And herein I bring the example of Uzinze Mandela, whose tweets obviously emoted quite a lot of things. I think for a lot of people it emoted anger, frustration, and perhaps, you know, a throwing of your hands in the air, you know, just saying, I'm done. I'm done with the, you know, the political niceties. And at this point, this is the only way that we're going to carve a way forward. It is a very, very emotive language that was used there. What do you say to people who want to police that and want to say that there is a proper way of engaging, there is a proper way of having this conversation, one that doesn't resort to these kinds of emotives?
Ntokozo, it was inevitable. It was always inevitable that South Africa was going to arrive at a point where Black people in particular are going to get it to a point where we no longer have the need or the desire to be nice anymore. It was inevitable. One of the things that has happened in South Africa in the last 25 years, right, is that you have had a systematic erasure of the experiences of Black people as it relates to apartheid, right? There is a particular systematic erasure that seeks to deny Black people their right to feeling, right? Their right to express a rage that is legitimately there. We saw it, by the way, during Fees Must Fall. We saw it during Votes Must Fall, where the conversation was that, young people are too angry and all of that and so on, right? As though there was something quite not right about being angry about a system that has thrust you into, you know, margins of non-existence, into zones of non-being. That is what it has done to us over the last many years. And there is this insistence that we need to be nice about this thing. We need to be polite. You know, what Zinzi has done is not right and so on. But that is exactly what happens when the society does not create a safe space in which people can openly articulate their views and engage meaningfully. So you see it, for example, and it's not a South African experience alone. I'll give you an example in Zimbabwe, right?
Mm-hmm.
Today in Zimbabwe in 2019, you still have a complete erasure, a complete deliberate systematic erasure of the Kukurawundi genocide of the 1980s, right? Where people were, over 20,000 people were killed in Matabele land in Zimbabwe, right?
Mm.
Today in Zimbabwe, when there are, struggles that are going on, be it, post-election violence or any other struggles that go on, you've got people in Matabele land and generally the developed population of Zimbabwe saying, yes, but, we are used to this government that has always, disenfranchised us and has subjected us to all kinds of abuse. They have always done it since the days of Kukurawundi. It is because there has not been a space of healing and honest and meaningful dialogue that allows people to be raw in their expression and emotions and how they express things. And that is why more than 20 years, more than 30 years later, people are still making reference to that, including even young people who may not have been part of that that genocide are still raising that. So in South Africa today, we are not going to stop having black people who are going to raise issues with the rawness with which Ambassador Mandela, and by the way, I support her view, with which Ambassador Mandela did, because we have cemented and normalized a culture of being very apologetic and trying to be nice about issues about which our raw emotions must find expression.
Thank you so much, Malaika. I'd like to bring in Asanda Ngwasheng into the conversation, political analyst and transformation expert. Asanda, in my intro, I think I mentioned, the politics and the activism of an organization like AfriForum, right? That entered the fray by releasing a statement saying that, they're going to ask that Zindzi Mandela actually be recalled as an ambassador on the premise that, her comments are, I suppose, anti-government. They're not in line with the Constitution. They're not in line even with the ethos and the ideals espoused by members of the ANC, particularly the one on non-racialism. My question to you is, should that matter? Should the fact that she is an ambassador even be something that we consider, especially when we look at the context of the greater conversation that Malaika so wonderfully sort of laid out for us, just the rawness of the emotion that lies in the history of this country and, of course, in trying to address some of these injustices?
Thank you for having me on. I think it's very important that that Zindzi Mandela is an ambassador. And I personally don't think that there's anything wrong per se that she said, because I think that, to be an apartheid apologist is to be an apologist for what was declared officially as a crime against humanity. And so we know that in places like Germany, for example, you can actually get prosecuted for being a denialist of the Holocaust. And it's just that in South Africa, we haven't gone that far in terms of legislation. So there's actually nothing wrong with what she said. And if you consider who, besides the fact that she's an ambassador, if you consider who is saying that, Zindzi Mandela is one of the people who has every single right to say what she said. Because if you think about it, if you apologize to apartheid or you deny apartheid or you say apartheid was not as bad as it was, then essentially what you're saying is that her father spending 27 years in jail was all in vain. You're saying that there was no reason for her father to spend all that time in jail. You're saying that.
But are we saying her utterances are, they have credence because of her father's sacrifice? Because at the same time, we've also argued that she is her own person. And so, we respect and we accept her words because they're coming from her as the individual based on her own experiences.
Well, I mean, I think it's both. I think it's first, as I've said, that it is it says a lot about her father, but it also says a lot about her, because remember that as much as we don't talk about what children of struggle heroes had to endure, Zindzi Mandela basically had to give up having a father. She essentially gave her father to the nation. And so if there's anybody who understands the impact of apartheid, who understands and actually personally sacrificed at a personal level, it's someone like her. And so it's both because of what her father did and also because of who she is herself and the personal sacrifices that she herself had to make, and because she's an ambassador. I mean, these guys are talking about her being ambassador needing to be removed, which gives the impression that South Africa officially should accept apartheid apologists or should
right.
accept
as though we are confused on our own
which
stance.
Which is not true. Yeah. The reason why we're seeing so many people being persecuted for hate crimes, we're seeing so many people being persecuted for all kinds of things to do with racism is because as a country we do not promote such. Mm. And so there's nothing really anti-South Africa or anti-South African policy that she has said. And we know that the ANC has put down a resolution. And we know that as we speak, the very parliament of South Africa is busy in the process of changing the constitution in order to be able to change it so that land expropriation without compensation can happen.
Mm.
And we know that land expropriation already is accommodated within the constitution. So I'm failing to understand the part where what she has said is completely anti-government.
Mm.
What she has said is un-South African or is anti any policy that this country has. And I think part of the problem is exactly as Malaika has said, that we have for so long we have been comfortable, or white people particularly of this country have been comfortable with South Africans talking about these very difficult issues in harsh tones, or talking about it
and not talking about it openly,
or talking about it with a reconciliatory tone. And the problem that exists right now is that there's a lot of tone policing because people are not used to black people expressing their anger. People are not used to black people speaking their truth. And I think that's a serious problem. When you have, you know, the majority percentage of a country being told by the minority percentage of a country that you can and can't say this. I mean, you look at our South African statistics from 2011 say that 8.9% of the population in South Africa is white.
Mm.
If you look at the AfriForum numbers, in July 2018, they were sitting at 210,000 members. Now, why are we even listening to and having debates about what AfriForum says?
Mm.
I mean, it's 210,000 people.
You know,
that's like a beyond negligible percentage of South Africans. And yet every single time they say something, we must now come and have a long debate and unpack.
Mm.
And that for me is really part of the problem, that we actually give AfriForum far too much coverage considering the percentage of support that they have, considering their actual stated number of members as a percentage of the population. It's negligible.
Very good point there. Very good point. What do you say to, the duplicity, I think, of the organization? Because, you know, while we can, you know, sit here on our platforms and say that, you know, we shouldn't be giving them coverage, they have the resources to get their statements out there, to get their statements on various media platforms. They have the money to do that, to sort of saturate our media landscape with whatever propaganda or whatever policy or whatever stance they may have at the time. But what would your advice be, I think, to people who are consumers, who are consuming this information, who are consuming these conversations? What would you say just to, I suppose, caution them against the duplicity of organizations like AfriForum? Because as I mentioned, you know, in my intro earlier, not so long ago, the very same organization was arguing for the continued use of the old South African flag, at least for arguing against its banning. And knowing full well, just, you know, in terms of symbolism, how symbolic that flag is for the oppression that was suffered in this country. What's your word of your cautionary word, I would say, to consumers when dealing with organizations like this in the media and the media consumption space? What should they look out for? What should they be wary of?
Well, I mean, I think that there's nothing wrong with covering AfriForum and what AfriForum says every once in a while. But what I'm saying is we shouldn't be in a situation where our entire national agenda is set by a minority of a minority. Because if the white population in South Africa is 8.9% at 4 million, and AfriForum members, actual paying members, are only sitting at 210,000, then that's a minority of a minority. And so essentially what we do when we continuously prioritize and put on the agenda what they say is that we amplify these messages. And when we amplify these messages, we give the impression that there are more people who think like AfriForum than we would like to believe. And I'm not saying that, you know, there isn't an increasing wave of right-wingers that's happening in South Africa. But what I'm saying is, if you look at actual percentages of membership, we have to be quite aware that it's a minority. And in terms of, how do we count, or how do we read the messages critically, I think I think that AfriForum, to any rational person, unveils itself quite quickly. As you mentioned, they were arguing just the other day for the apartheid flag. Now, that is nobody that is for South Africa, that is for the future of South Africa, and that is for a united South Africa, not Rainbow Nation vibe united, but real united South Africa.
Yes.
Moving forward and recognizing each other and respecting each other. Nobody that believes that would argue
for that. I do want to take some calls, Asanda. We have a couple of calls, both Asanda and Malaika, actually. Let's go to, who's been holding on for a while? Lesego in Hammanskraal. Hi, Lesego.
Hello, ma'am.
Hi.
This topic is long overdue, actually, first of all.
Absolutely.
Number two, I think the lady who just spoke.
Asanda, yes.
The latter, yeah, sorry, I couldn't grasp her name. She's spot on, and she took most of my points. We shouldn't be at the position where we are debating our national agenda for the majority of this country, number one. Number two is, it's amazing how much we as black people have to censor our feelings, our emotions, in terms of expressing the issues and the atrocities that actually happen to us. It's like making a very raw example where I say, because that's how I compare apartheid. Apartheid to me is like a case of rape. So there's an offender and there's a victim. The offender tells the victim how to express themselves. It's exactly what's happening in South Africa right now. Black people, as victims, we are told how to express ourselves, what to say about what happened to us, what to say about what would bring healing to us. Because we know what's going to bring healing to us, but it's just we're not allowed to talk about it.
Mm.
Land is one of the issues. Economic inclusion is one of the issues. Proper, fair media coverage is one of the issues. So we can never build a nation based on one side of the rainbow, because we like to refer to ourselves as the rainbow nation. It has to include everyone. All the colors of the spectrum have to be included and have to be addressed. The issues have to be addressed.
All right.
Thank you.
Thank you, Lisa. Let's go to Sean in Greenstone. Hi, Sean.
Good afternoon.
Afternoon, yes.
I just want to say, it's quite scary what I'm hearing here. Just because a group is small doesn't mean they shouldn't have a voice. That's majoritarianism and not democracy. Democracy kind of is the idea that everyone has a voice. And as much as they're a bunch of idiots a lot of the time, I think it's important that they do have a voice, because smart people will be able to kind of weed out what's wrong with them pretty quickly. So I don't think silencing them is a good idea. And the problem is, AfriForum isn't the only group that falls into this. It just happens with white people. But the cancer that it is basically identity politics. And we need to move away from that as a country, that if you look a certain way or you believe a certain thing or you are a certain gender, then you are a certain thing. And it's a very slippery slope. And if you look back throughout history, just in the last 100 years, how many genocides have been committed against people collectively committing a crime or kind of basically charging people with a crime just because they are a certain gender or a certain race. So I think we need to kind of give AfriForum a voice. They'll kind of dig their own hole, because I think most smart people realize that what they do is ridiculous. And we shouldn't silence them, but we need to move away from identity politics. I think it's the most dangerous thing we're dealing with as a country at the moment.
All right, Sean, thank you. I don't think, I'll give Asanda an opportunity to reply, but I don't think she was advocating for silencing the group. I think more than anything, just a cautionary tale of how much we consume and how much we internalize of what is being said by AfriForum. Just giving us the numbers there in terms of how many people they actually represent and how much say and how much way they should have, how much, I suppose, just, like I said, how much way they should have in the conversation about any national agenda. Let's quickly go to Shepherd before we wrap up with the guests. Hi, Shepherd.
Hi, how are you?
Good. How are you?
I'm good. Yes, talking about the land issue, I want to only raise 2 points quickly.
Mm.
The first point I want to raise on the land issue is that what happened is, like, when someone steals your car, then when someone comes to mediate, they say, forgive the person. Why is she still stole your car? And you are the one who have to forgive to
and you're carless. Oh, Shepherd. Oh. Okay, let's quickly go back to our guest there to just respond to our callers. Let's go to Malaika, just because we haven't heard from you in a while. Malaika, what do you make of some of the callers there, particularly Sean, Sean's comment on how perhaps we should be refocusing our attention on the conversation towards identity politics instead?
So, you know, I was actually laughing to myself when I was listening to Sean, right? Because, you know, that is the thing about, you know, the thing about racism that I always say, right, is that, you know, it is so pervasive that sometimes even when, you know, some of our white friends and colleagues think they're being progressive, they're actually being extremely racist. And I'll tell you why. So tuition fees must fall and roads must fall. When we're making an argument for the transformation of institutions of learning, the decolonization, rather, of institutions of learning, right, we would pose arguments around things like, you know, we need the names of monuments and buildings and so on changed, because that is fundamentally a question of representation, but it's also, you know, part of the healing process that we need to have in this country, that we need to recognize the voice of people who for so very many years have been deliberately and systematically silenced, right?
Mm.
And so one of the responses, a very popular response that would come out of that, and it was very particular with white students and in historically white institutions, and I say this as a student of one of those, I'm at Rhodes University, one of the arguments that would come back would be, no, you know, fine, let's not call this Jan van Riebeck Hall, but let's not name it anything. So let's call it after a flower or you know, a color. Let's call it red, the Red Hall or the Red Theater or, you know, the Protea Theater, whatever, right? So that we don't name it after, say, Winnie Mandela or Robert Sobukwe and so on, right? And that is seen as a way in which we kind of, you know, deal with the issue, so that we don't, let's not talk identity politics. Let's almost be colorblind, you know, in order for us to express the fact that, you know, we don't want to cling onto this thing of identity politics. And that's exactly what Sean does here, right? That in saying that, let's not, you know, when you're saying, but, you know, AfriForum, Asanda correctly says, AfriForum deeply problematic ideologically, but also, I mean, she raises the issue of numbers, which for me is not the biggest concern, but she raises an important issue about, you know, the very ideology of AfriForum and so on. And instead of, you know, deeply problematizing that ideology of AfriForum, calling it out for what it really is, a very deeply bigoted right-wing politics that are very anti-black and so on, instead of being very deliberate on that, right, Sean wants to turn the conversation to say, oh no, identity politics are a problem, and he does not make it very clear, right?
I'm going to ask you to take a breather there, because it is the top of the hour and we do need to get our news bulletin, but we will resume this conversation shortly after that. It's 2 o'clock. Let's get your news now with Thando Mayako.
Weekdays 1 to 3 p.m. This is Power Lunch with Ntokozo Mazibuko.
6 minutes past 2 o'clock, you're listening to Power Lunch with me, Ntokozo Mazibuko. We are currently talking about Zindzi Mandela's political storm that she unleashed, I think, with her tweets over the weekend. And we've been trying to make sense of some of it, but really trying to have a conversation around the policing of people's views, people's expressions, people's thoughts and opinions, especially when it comes to contentious issues in this country. And we know very well what those issues are. But it does seem to happen a lot of the time that when we are discussing race and the issue of race in this country, we never seem to get very far, because a lot of the times, you know, people are often being told how they should be able to say certain things and express these views. And I've been talking to my esteemed guests today, Malaika Wa'azania, South African writer and political commentator, as well as political analyst and transformation expert, Asanda Ngwasheng. Malaika, before we had to go for news there, you were busy just giving us your thought there. If you want to just wrap that up for us very quickly.
So I was simply saying that, you know, the caller who had made an argument that, you know, we need to, you know, do away with identity politics and so on, it does it from a very opportunistic angle. And it's not something that is unusual. We are very used to this, that whenever black people in particular begin to raise issues around race, then the argument is not one that seeks to, you know, really deal with the issues that they're raising, to understand the issues that we are raising, but it's rather to say, no, you know, let's not do that. And it's part of this culture of silencing that we are speaking about here today. So what the caller did is exactly what we are talking about here, right? The issue of wanting to silence it and using some kind of, you know, arguments for rational, like, you know, rational people will do, but rational people also are the ones that sustained apartheid for so many years, right? So we must not take it for granted that, you you know, because AfriForum does this, and you know, even if, and we say, you know, rational people will be able to see AfriForum for what it really is. But the latest situation is that they are raising politics that are very deeply problematic, and those politics must be engaged and, you know, called by their proper name, reactionary, problematic, and so on, and not simply be dismissed in the manner that he wants us to do. And I think it's wrong also that people want to then say, no, Asanda is saying we must, you know, there's also this narrative that says Asanda is implying that certain people must be silenced. That is not what she was saying at all. And I think we're correct, Dogosity, to, you know, to explain that properly, to say that what she's saying is that, you know, we should not be engaged in a situation where a minority of people in this country are going to set the tone for what the agenda of this country ought to be. That is problematic, and Asanda is correct.
All right, Malaika Wazania, thank you so much for joining us on Power Lunch today, and just for sharing with us, of course, your insights and your opinions on the conversation. But just to wrap up with Asanda as well, you heard everything that the callers had to say, some of the tweets that I've read. Just in closing, for this conversation moving forward, because I suspect that there will be more sort of conversations like these when people try to engage in contentious issues like the one that we're currently talking about. What is your advice moving forward, I think, especially when people, you know, are, you know, if you're picking up your phone and you're getting ready to tweet a reply, just sort of pause and think about what you're saying, especially if you're going to be in a position where you are questioning and trying to dictate or prescribe to another individual how they should think and how they should see or feel certain things.
Well, I mean, I think that it's exactly as Malaika has said, and I mean, there's a social media, there's a saying that gets you know, repeated quite often in social media, which is that for people who are used to privilege, equality often feels like oppression.
It feels like an affront.
So,
yeah.
Sean suffers from that, right? He is so used to a minority view being amplified and setting the agenda, that when I say that we need to think about the proportion of media coverage that we give as a percentage of the population that actually believes in these views, he hears me saying we need to shut people up, we need to erase people's thoughts. That's not what I said. What I said is that if you look at 210,000 people versus 55 million people, how much airtime do those 210,000 people deserve as a percentage of 55 million? So I never said they should never be given a view. Of course they should be given. But you cannot prioritize the thoughts of 210,000 people over and above the thoughts of the rest of the 55 million South Africans who have to live their lives and have to listen to this stuff all day. And I think that, you know, there's a sense in which we do this thing in South Africa where, because people have official organizations and they have a lot of money that they pump into them, and then they have lawyers who, you know, represent them, we begin to believe that they're legitimate organizations. I don't think AfriForum is a legitimate organization. I think it's an illegitimate organization. I think it's a right-wing organization, and I think it's a racist organization that is interested only in the privileging, the further privileging of the Afrikaner, and they're interested in nothing else. In fact, what AfriForum wants us to do is to go back to apartheid. If they could have their way, we would be back in apartheid and black people would be oppressed. That's what they want. And it's not right to give them the amount of airtime that we give them. I will repeat that again. It's not right.
All right.
You know, and I think that also it's very important that we understand what identity politics are. Part of the reason why we sit with people who feel that they can tell black people how to react to things is precisely because people did not study identity politics. It's precisely because people do not understand what positionality is, which is the fact that if you come from a specific group of people, there are things that you can and things that you cannot say to other people, and that you must always make sure that when you are engaging different people from different groupings, you are hyper aware of the sensitivities that those people come from. And people who purport, or people who make arguments like identity politics are the problem, are able to do that because they come from a place of privilege. The privilege of having the identity being constantly affirmed. The privilege of having the identity being constantly represented. So when you are white and you switch on the TV and it's white people, and you switch on the radio and it's white people and white opinions and white ideologies, then you begin to feel like white is right. And then you will have a problem when black opinions opinions are suddenly given airtime because this has never happened to you. And that is the problem that Sean suffers from. And I would really suggest that for him and for any other white person that hears what I'm saying and feels like I'm being racist, they really need to check themselves. And they really need to think about what it is that they think that the South Africa that we are living in, this post-apartheid South Africa, is supposed to be. And they really need to think about why they don't think that 55 million voices or 80, 90% of 55 million people should not be heard.
All right, Asanda, yeah.
You know, they have a bigger voice.
Mm, yeah. Thank you so much. Thank you so much. You've said quite a bit towards the end there, but I really have to appreciate and thank you for your time, of course, and just coming on air to share your insights with us. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Asanda Ngwasheng, their political analyst and transformation expert, just lending some of her insights into the conversation that we were having, specifically about, you know, why we react in a certain way when people talk to certain issues in this country, instead of asking the questions like, why was this person particularly triggered in this way, which will then speak to, you know, the sensitivity of the issue. We sort of just nosedive into criticizing what they're saying, nosedive into criticizing the contents of what they're saying, as opposed to properly engaging and properly trying to understand what it is that what the point is exactly that they're trying to get across. Let's go to Pedro. I do want to close this conversation, though. Hi, Pedro.
Hi, Khaitigarun. We should never underestimate AfriForum, even if there are 200,000. ISIL, we're not the majority. Al Qaeda, we're not the majority. So they are, for me, AfriForum, the highly organized, neo-apartheid, racist, right-wing organization that is very capable of destabilizing the country because of the resources that they have, you know. So we should never underestimate them. They should not be under the radar in terms of checking them. But also, we should not admire them, really, because their agenda is to be anti-transformation. You know, so we should never make a mistake that they are minority and underestimated. If you remember, in 1994, there was this group that started the bombings. You remember them? I can't remember their name. But there was another one that was extremely radical.
Okay.
Extremely radical. Who had a bomb in Soweto and so on. So, and some of them, I find that they are former military guys. So we must never underestimate AfriForum.
All right, Pedro, giving us a warning there about underestimating AfriForum. I just want to read a couple of your tweets here. Puti saying the land issue is a serious problem that we derived from apartheid. Zindzi Mandela should be allowed to utter her views without fear from anybody, irrespective of her occupation. Koketso tweeting that, I agree with your guess. What is also sad is that even feasible activists like Kanya are languishing in jail because they stood up against an oppressive system and dare to speak up against the establishment. Africans must stand with Zinzi. And we also have Palisa Khashani here saying, I fully agree with Asanda in saying that AfriForum is being given too much credit than it's worth. The group seeks to take us back to politics of dictatorship by the minority over the majority when it comes to issues of transformation. They must sit down and, I don't know if I can say that on air. Shut up. Can I say that on air? I wasn't sure. I think it's important, just in closing that conversation, it's important to note that we do live in a constitutional democracy. And so regardless of even how we feel, even as Black people, the rage, however justified the rage is, everything has to be done in a manner that ensures that no rights are violated and that no one's, like I said, no one's rights are infringed upon. And so I think even as we, you know, proceed with this conversation and proceed with other conversations around contentious issues, let's always remember that we do live in this country that upholds the Constitution. And until certain things like the Bill of Rights are amended, people's voices, people's opinions, people's thoughts, people's concerns will always have a room to be heard. For as long as we have the freedom of expression that we have, they will always be heard, including the likes of Sean, including even the likes of Uzinzi Mandela. Everybody has to have their say and has a right to say it.
You've been listening to a Power 98.7 podcast. For more podcasts, visit power987.co.za or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.